Be the intro. What do you take it from there? You can explain this.
Well, before we start recording, Dan does this 10 seconds of silence thing, which I assume has some is necessary for the recording process.
It's to get the room tone, so I can remove that. Yeah.
And I was just thinking how funny it would be if, when we're both silent, if Dan just ripped a big one.
And normally I have one in the chamber and I could just do that, but, you know, I'm sorry I wasn't able to deliver on that. But it seemed like just the thought alone was enough to
I couldn't stop thinking about it, so we had to redo the 10 seconds several times, and then finally Dan just gave up and decided to make it the intro.
You laughed every time there was silence because you were thinking about the potential of a fart. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
This is Panning the Stream. I am Dan Reichard, and sitting across from me is my wife, Bianca Reichard.
Hello.
How are you doing, honey?
Great.
I'm doing great, too.
I didn't ask you.
That's true.
No one cares.
All right. Okay. Well, now I'm doing terrible.
Oh.
Okay. We watched Castlevania.
Yes,
should we roll with this?
Yeah.
That's the intro?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, sure, fuck it. We watched Castlevania Season 2.
And it was great.
It's fucking awesome.
Oh my gosh, the show is so good.
Yeah, I if you listen to last week's episode, you know that we were pretty big on what we saw, which is kind of that 4-episode kind of teaser almost. It almost felt like a little like prequel thing you'd watch before the full movie. Like, what do they call that? You know, sometimes where it's like, oh, watch this thing. This little some shows do that. 24 did that once. They did like a 1-hour movie or something before a season started. We're going to set up what the real deal thing is. And like season 2 here just feels like this is a full on real big story. Whereas the first one was pretty short.
I mean, the first one did have like a beginning, middle, and end, but it definitely was just kind of setting up what happens in the second season. And also the second season is 8 episodes, so it's twice as long as the first season, which we didn't know. Right? I feel like we should say, because we weren't aware of that until we started watching, that it was eight episodes. So we watched all 8.
Yeah, we were actually just kind of assuming it would be the same thing. And then it's like, well, okay, we already said last week that we're going to do the whole thing, so let's do the whole fucking thing here.
Yeah, so consequently, and I said this to you when we were finished watching it, it really felt more like a show where the first season feels more like a movie in like 4 different parts.
Totally.
But this one feels like a show, and like a lot, so much time is devoted to, you know, character development and setting the scene and everything. And it's more about the villains, I would say, than Trevor and Alucard and Sypha.
Yeah, whereas I think the first season was, you know, you see Dracula in a big way in the first episode, and then after that, it's pretty much all Trevor all the time, basically.
Right.
Yes, it's the speakers and all that stuff with the church and everything. Whereas this, I mean, we kind of start out with just tons of Dracula shit, and it kind of stays that way. Like, we check in on Belmont and Alucard and Sypha every once in a while, but like it's largely the story of Dracula, and now it's fleshing out his army and his henchmen and everything. And they start that right away at the beginning of the season. So there are basically, I would say, 4 main people we see that are kind of high up in the Dracula organization, which it is kind of weird to see this all of a sudden, because the first season, it was just nothing but like demons and like werewolf things and stuff. And now all of a sudden, it's like, oh, here's all these like generals and an army and a structure and everything.
War council.
Yeah, it's not just this like horde of demons that like rips babies apart in the night. Like, these are like people that are strategizing and coming up with war tactics.
Yeah, I mean,
and stuff.
It makes sense that all the lesser vampires would, you know, worship Dracula or obey him or whatever, follow him, because he seems to be the head honcho, I guess? Vampiric
he's
honcho?
The head vampire in charge, yeah. So the first one we meet is, it's Godbrand, who is the most Peter Stormare character.
Oh my gosh, they didn't even give, I doubt they gave Peter Stormare any direction with this character. I'm sure they were just like, be yourself.
Just be Peter Stormare. That's all we want. That's why we hired you. He's excellent in everything he's in, and he's funny and weird. Godbrand is this, like, he's a vampire who's just, like, man, fuck all this. I just want to drink blood and kill people and stuff.
Was he a Viking when, like, pre-vampire days? Is that what they say?
He makes reference to that and talks about, like, boats and stuff like that. And, like, he literally, like, has daydreams of just, like, marauding through villages. And, like, there's one part where he has a dream and he wakes up going, like, ah, blood. Like, that's what he's dreaming about, is, like, running through the snow, decapitating
people.
That's
gotta be what Razor dreams of when he's, like, I mean, just, you know, replace blood with food or whatever.
Yeah, it's just kibble or whatever. Yeah, we're going to the park.
But these vampires, they make short work of humans. If there's a real situation in which there's like a horde of vampires invading New York City or something, we'd all be so fucked. Because they, with no effort at all, like, they just make our bodies explode.
But they have some glaring weaknesses. They've got the whole stake through the heart thing.
Yeah, but that implies that you have to get close enough, and you have to be strong enough to put it through the heart. Which, I mean, that's got to be difficult to do. It's not like it's, you know, a knife on warm butter, like from Commando.
But if we, yes, if we had a real,
Some reason, that's like the one thing I clearly remember from that movie, is that analogy. Yeah, we're going to put this, we're going to, something about the daughter and killing her like a knife through warm butter.
I think, though, if we had a real life vampire epidemic, like, how quickly would, like, the military figure out a way to, like, okay, we have built this cannon that shoots a billion wooden stakes a minute, and we will just destroy the Draculas or the vampires? We'd figure it out.
Yeah, but that's true. But it's not like they're animals. They seem to be as smart, if not smarter, than humans.
Yeah, and they can do crazy, like, warpy stuff, mm-hmm. but they can't go out in the daytime. No. They're allergic or afraid of garlic and crosses. Stakes will straight up kill them.
Now, is the garlic thing, was that laughed at in this world, or is that considered like, oh, no, garlic will harm us?
They make a mention of garlic, but I think it is kind of like, fucking whatever. Like,
if there ever is a vampire, like, invasion, we'll just move to Italy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Everything has garlic.
It'll be totally safe, yeah.
It'll be super safe.
Yeah. But yeah, they're kind of badasses in this. Like, all the vampires are just cool as shit, especially Dracula. That dude.
I mean, he's cool, yeah, but he's, like, super depressed and apathetic, yes. And obviously just under the enormous weight of the grief, having just had his wife murdered.
Yeah, there is a great part later on in this season where he is, like, basically one of his war council people. We'll talk about her in a second. She's talking about how, like, hey, we want to go kill all these people. We're going to kill the humans. Isn't this going to be great? And he's just like, man, yeah, just get it done. I don't need the details. I'm kind of bored mm-hmm. with the death thing. Like, there used to be a time that I was into this and I would relish this. And we see this, like, flashback of just killing the shit out of people.
A bunch of merchants. Yeah. They don't go into how they fucked over Dracula, but they did. And they super paid the price for it.
Yeah. He is just like, and he is having fun doing it. Like, totally. Just like, he's just like showering in blood. And
yeah. And he's just fucking super cool. And remember that part with the arrows when, like, the guy from, like, the watchtower is shooting arrows at him and he's deftly maneuvering away from the arrows.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
just flies up there and just grabs the guy and brings him into the shadows and presumably kills him in a really brutal way because you just hear him screaming.
Yeah. We've talked about it a little bit last week, but, like, I have not taken in too much vampire fiction.
Same.
And especially watching this show, I'm like, holy shit, Dracula's fucking cool.
But I don't know if this is, like, especially dark and gruesome, because I feel like all the what few vampire things I have encountered have been more like PG-13 and, you know, like fucking Twilight or whatever.
We should watch Bram Stoker's Dracula with Gary Oldman as Dracula. Mm. Like, that's a...
Let's do it. That sounds really interesting.
Pretty cool, yeah. I've only Gary seen it Oldman. Once, but I remember... it's a dark, like, rated R. Like, it's Gary Oldman, Keanu Reeves, Tom Waits.
Because, you know, sometimes I feel like in vampire fiction, when the vampire sucks the blood of the humans, it's always this, like, dainty little bite mark on the neck.
Yeah.
But no, in, like, Castlevania, they fucking tear out, like, a huge part of the neck, and it just seems horribly uncomfortable.
Yes.
What I'm curious about is how one becomes a vampire. Because I always thought...
You get bit by one.
You get bit by one, but those people are obviously super dead that get bitten.
Well, I don't think they all have to be like that. Like, I bet they can choose because... Actually, so the woman I referred to earlier, the war council lady who wanted to kill the people, that is Carmilla, who we meet. And she, like, in her introduction, she actually calls Dracula out for not turning Lisa into a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's like, hey, you hate humans so much. Why didn't you fucking turn your bride or whatever into a vampire? And mm-hmm. she'd, like, live, you know, as long as you do and everything. So that does imply that, like, he had the chance to, like, oh, if he could have just gave her a little nice bite, turn her into a vampire. But also, if
now,
he just
I
wants
wonder,
some...
why do you think he didn't do that? We never really go into why in the show.
they don't, I don't know, maybe he saw like an innocence in her that, you know, he and his kind, like obviously vampires were these like very dark, evil.
Yeah.
Like...
And you know what I wonder, Dan? This is what I reckon. Perhaps because she's a human and she has a very finite lifespan, you know, I feel like being human, knowing that we have a limited time, kind of motivates us to get shit done and learn about stuff. And maybe is why she felt so compelled to learn as much as she could. And so he didn't want to rob her of that. But I would imagine, though, if he truly loved her, he would have turned her into a vampire, which is obviously bullshit because he super loved her. But
yeah.
I'm just, I'm curious. I wish they would have gone into that more.
I kind of do like that, how they do have a bit of a mystery. Like we see some flashbacks and we see Alucard talking about her at times and it, we see paintings of her and cool little flashbacks. Like there's parts where people are in the castle and they see just kind of like ghostly memories of Lisa. Like, I don't know. I think she is a cool thing hanging over this whole show. And I think if they exposed it too much and showed too much, it might be over-explaining.
I don't think this would be over-explaining. I think it would be more giving insight into Dracula's state of mind than getting into Lisa's stuff. I think it's like, why does he choose to not turn her into a vampire? Why doesn't he choose to turn Isaac and Hector into vampires? Like, it seems like his closest associates are human. Even his son is half human. It's like, I don't know. I'm just wondering why. And maybe the vampires, maybe the humanity, I mean, literally, obviously, the humanity is gone in the vampires, but, like, the humanity in the sense of, like, you know, caring for things and being empathetic and everything, maybe that's gone in vampires and he knows that, so he doesn't want to rob them of that. I don't know. This is all just guessing, but it's something that I'm curious about that they didn't really go into.
Yeah, it's really not touched upon, and you're right that, like, you know, several people in this war council do have, I guess they're just full-on humans. You mentioned Hector and Isaac,
yeah.
So those are... two other big ones we meet at the beginning here. And so Isaac, we see kind of these flashbacks of him. He was a slave and he had the slave owner that was just fucking terrible to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he winds up like poking that guy's eyes out. And then like he still kind of maintains throughout the season, like he's still got, even though he's not a slave, you know, technically anymore, he's like whipping himself and stuff. And like he's acting like
self-flagellation.
Yeah. And he's acting like it's like a mental thing to keep himself focused and keep himself like humble and you know, eye on the prize.
It seems so horribly uncomfortable. Did you ever see... the first season of Boardwalk Empire?
I didn't know.
Well, Michael Shannon had a character in that show, and he's like one of the main characters. But in the first season, they build him up to this like hyper religious guy who like self-flagellates in his like hotel room alone at night after he flirts with some girl or some shit. And then they slowly move away from that without ever addressing it again.
Really?
But it's for me when I see that. It always reminds me of, like, religious devotion. Like,
yeah.
Devotion to a really intense extent.
Totally, yeah. I mean, there would have to be some very extreme, you know, mental pull to make yourself do that over and over again.
Right. To yourself. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then we've got Hector, who, so he's another henchman who is a human. And he, we see a flashback of him, and he had a dog that died, and he brought it back to life. And it seems to be that's the thing with Hector and Isaac, is I think they call them both Forge Masters, whereas Hector deals a lot with, like, animals and things like that. And Isaac, you know, he's got, like, these daggers and stuff that he can, like, bring people and turn people into demons and stuff like that. But
I think Hector can do that, too. They show him with that corpse on the table at one point.
Oh, right. Is that the priest from the first season that gets super murdered? Is that him that brings it back?
I think it is him because that's the priest that blesses the lake or whatever and makes it holy water. So
yeah, so maybe they can both do that. It's just, they tend to show Hector, you know, has a certain fondness towards animals for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I am fond of animals too, but I wouldn't want this like half decomposed, you know, missing an eyeball, skull showing.
Yeah, this like glowing blue eye. Yeah, it's pretty weird. But then, perhaps the most important of all these that we kind of referred to earlier, Carmilla. So she kind of comes in out of nowhere. She is a drac, or she's a vampire, and she's like, "Hey, I want to join the war council." And then like right away, that's when she calls out Dracula for not turning Lisa, but he doesn't seem to have much of an issue with bringing her into the fold. So,
well, I think he requested her presence a while ago and she just kind of took her time to get there, which from the jump, we know that she doesn't really respect him as much as the others do.
Right. She's not like dyed in the wool the way the other guys have like followed Dracula for a long time.
So, and then from that, we can kind of imply that she's probably immensely powerful herself, the fact that she can just openly disrespect him like that.
Totally. Yeah. She just kind of struts in there and starts throwing her
and
right around.
Strutting is something she does quite often. She struts all about. She has a very beautiful gown on. She's very pretty and has a very posh voice, but she sounds like she has a slight cold. Right?
I didn't think about that. I'll have to keep that in mind.
She's very mean. She's like every girl that rejected you in middle school or whatever. She's mean and, you know, always trying to manipulate people. And she's truly evil. She seems more evil to me than Dracula himself. Well, what say you, Dan?
They spend so much time humanizing Dracula and, you know, even the other guys. Like, maybe not so much Godbrand, but Hector and Isaac. Mm-hmm. There's definitely enough of, like, oh, okay, we can kind of sympathize with these characters, even though they're doing, like, evil shit.
Yeah, well, even Godbrand was like, at that one point, he said, you know, if we kill all the humans, where are we going to get the food from?
Right, right. So, yeah, there is, like, a motivation. It's not just pure bloodthirst. It's, mm-hmm. well, like I said, it is bloodthirst in the way that that's how they stay alive, and right. that's what they feed on. But, yeah, I'd say Carmilla is the most just straight up like evil person in this mm-hmm. entire show, and we definitely see some of that later on.
For sure, it seems that way.
But she's a cool character. Like, there's a real confidence about her, and there's a real like, oh man, you probably shouldn't fuck with her quality to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then near the beginning here, we also learn that Dracula moves the castle with the save spot from Symphony of the Night, which I liked a lot. This is a thing we kind of talked about it last time because they did a couple little things with like the axe and the holy water and stuff in the first season where I was like, ah, I remember that from the video game. They do a lot more of that this season, but it's always in ways that if you didn't play the game, I don't think it would stick out in a bad way. Like the save spot thing. Mm-hmm. That would just look like a weird floating, rotating orb thing.
Right.
But for me, it's like, oh, fucking cool. And we'll get some stuff later on. Like, there's lots of little, like, throwbacks for fans of the
series. Yeah, and the way this TV show does it, it's so subtle. Like, you would have no idea that it's based on a video game unless, you know, you knew.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't bash you over the head with, like, explicit video game references.
No.
And all the aspects that it does refer to from the games kind of blend seamlessly in the real world that they created with this show.
It totally fits, and it's so amazing to me because that is a game series where there is not a lot of cutscenes or anything. Mm-hmm. If we're not talking about the 3D ones or anything,
mm-hmm.
it's basically like the beginning of each game is you're storming the castle, and then the whole game is you just killing shit in the castle,
right.
getting to Dracula. It's basically episode 7 of this season is every game in right. the Castlevania series, and they managed to take the very thin concepts mm-hmm. in the game, the veneer of story, and then flesh it out in a way that's like right. remarkably good, like, and probably my favorite video game thing ever turned into TV.
It's really
movie.
Good. It really is. And maybe that's why it's so good, because they didn't have this like really fleshed out meaty story that they felt they had to be super faithful to, you know, or if you know, that game had cutscenes, like actual cutscenes, you know, they'd probably want to recreate them or whatever. And, you know, video game writing certainly back then wasn't nearly as good. So
right.
to feel like they just have to do a one-to-one thing, whereas in its current state, as it's kind of just like a framework and is more about mood and stuff like that,
yeah.
for them to work off of that, I think they have a lot more freedom and were able to really make it something special.
Yeah, totally. And you mentioned how video game writing, you know, has not typically been that great. Like, the most famous line in the history of Castlevania, in the little bit of story they put mm-hmm. in, is widely regarded as one of the, like, cheesiest lines ever, where it's like, what is a man? A miserable pile of secrets. Have at you, that Dracula says at the beginning of Symphony. It's great, but like, again, a series that has never been known for its story,
mm-hmm.
but the characters were always cool. The idea of Dracula and like this family of vampire hunters and Alucard and everything, like, you're right. I see why this works, because
right.
they were able to flesh these out, but also not betray kind of what you felt about those characters
totally.
From the games. It's incredibly well done.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
so good.
I feel like there's... like two different kinds of Dracula stuff or vampire stuff that we see. There's like the really cheesy kind of romantic version, and then there's this like really gothic dark version,
mm-hmm.
and this definitely falls into that category. It's just super unbelievably dark and, you know, bleak and gray and just miserable.
Yeah, it's very bloody.
Like they're literally talking about exterminating all of humanity.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they refer to like just genocide several times.
Yeah.
Like, that's all he wants to do is just kill all humans.
Mm-hmm.
So
all he wants to do is kill humans. Can you imagine if that was the song?
I don't think it'd be as successful.
Do, 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 do,
remember when I played Don Henley's All She Wants to Do Is Dance and you left my house and walked down the street because you hate that song so much?
Yeah. That's a bad song.
Yeah. So checking in with the good guys here, we got Trevor and Sypha and Alucard, and they decide that they're going to go to the Belmont Hold, which is basically it's the family's home. Like the castle itself has been like fucked up, but like underground is just like fucking centuries or whatever of
it's like a giant library.
Yeah, of books that like the whole family has just chronicled everything about like what these things are weak to, and so they're like, okay. We're going to try to kill Dracula. Let's go there. Maybe we can find some information. Mm-hmm. And on the way there, there's like a campfire scene where a bunch of demons attack. And again, another subtle thing, a nod to the games. The first boss from Symphony of the Night, it's like a weird bat thing that carries around this weird like beaked dinosaur thing that has a spear. That attacks him. And again, you know, I'm kind of obsessed with that game. I don't know if you remember that boss fight. I know you've played the game. But did you recognize it?
Vaguely.
So that's the thing, is like, even if you hadn't played it, I think that just looks like a thing that would exist in the show. Mm-hmm. And it's not this like constant winking like, hey, let's, oh, remember this from Symphony? So yeah, there's like a little boss fight there. And that's
the only thing that would give me pause is that it's so specific. Like, you know, there are unique beasts in the show, but like none of them are as kind of specifically weird as that one.
Right, this thing that's carrying another weird thing.
Yeah.
But we see Sypha's fire magic abilities, and she kind of fucks up a bunch of demons.
Man,
with that.
I wish I was magical, Dan.
It'd be cool.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah. If you had to pick one element to be your magic, what would it be?
I feel like fire would be the most useful.
Fire's cool. Mine's lightning. I've always thought lightning powers are extremely cool.
Oh, yeah, that's very Sith of you.
Yeah, I always pick that in a game if it lets you pick kind of, like I'm playing Diablo 3 again right now, and anything that even resembles like lightning power, I go towards that. But basically the bad guys, I think Carmilla is the one who's like, oh, they're totally going to go to the Belmont Hold. Let's cut them off there. So they send people there. And, around episode 3 or so, they get to the hold, and Sypha also apparently has, like, these Elder Scrolls spells that will, like, help her lift things or make things lighter, because there's a huge, like, concrete slab that nobody can lift, but she does some crazy spell and lifts it up. And, most of this episode is spent with them just kind of exploring the hold, and it's just this big-ass basement, and this is where there's some fun references to the games. It's like, because there's a million little, like, display cases and stuff, and it's like, oh, there's a Medusa head, here's the cross item, and then, like, he even gets, like, a fucking whip upgrade here. Like, he opens up a little chest, and it's like, oh, it's like this flailed metal thing or whatever, which whip upgrades are totally a thing you get in the early games. So, yeah, that was a fun one. Not a super, like, action-packed sequence, but it was
some
a good
character development. We see, you know, Trevor and Sypha kind of bonding, and Alucard getting maybe a little jealous of them.
Yeah, being like, hey, Trevor's kind of an idiot. What's your deal? Like, why do you like him? Yeah, like some of that, like if there's one critique I would give this season, I think a lot of the writing around Sypha is some of it's not great, especially we'll get to the end, like where it's just like when they're trying to be kind of like cutesy or romantic or whatever, a lot of it just comes across kind of, you know, cheesy.
I mean, when you consider the fact that she has been, you know, part of this religion that's just been wandering around and just so devoted to what their goals are, whatever, this anti-god religion that they have.
Yeah.
I don't think someone who has been wrapped up in that for so long would be so quick to bond with someone who isn't part of that.
I guess that's true. If you took someone that was in some sort of like religious organization or cult or anything their entire life, and then you try to get them to talk to people and be a human,
yeah. I mean, she was silly and sarcastic at times, or wanted to kind of flirt with Trevor a little bit at times as well.
A little bit.
Which I don't think she would necessarily know how to do that.
Yeah.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
But while they're doing all this stuff, we're getting a lot of stuff of Carmilla basically trying to turn everyone against Dracula, mm-hmm. like kind of trying to stage this coup. So it's a lot of like, you know, meeting, like kind of Game of Thrones type stuff where they're just like walking through a garden or whatever, talking like, oh, so Dracula, he's making some mistakes. You know, maybe we can take care of that. And so she kind of starts planning this thing where she wants Dracula to warp the castle to this one particular city
in Brela
and be like, hey, let's go kill all the people there. And she's really pushing that. And that's why she's like pulling Hector and Isaac and Godbrand around, just be like, hey, let's do this. And everyone except Isaac seems pretty cool with it. Mm-hmm. Isaac is just completely devoted to Dracula.
Totally.
And there is a part where Dracula kind of senses this turning tide within the castle, and he talks to Isaac about it. And after that, Isaac is confronted by Godbrand, who's kind of like, hey, we should betray Dracula. And then Isaac kills the fuck out of Godbrand.
Super kills him.
What is he? He like slits his throat and then does something, just like completely incinerates him or something.
He super died.
Yeah, I can't remember if Isaac, he doesn't have any like magic powers or anything, does he?
Well, he does, I mean, to the extent that the Forge Masters do. I mean, he's able to,
oh, right,
you know, make things come alive again.
That's right. And I do seem to, I thought he got like on top of Godbrand after slitting his throat and then just decimated him, but I can't remember exactly how. I thought there was like some fire.
There were
or
so many
involved.
Like sick deaths in this show, so
it's
forgivable to not remember a particular one.
Yes, yes. So around this time, like, Sypha finds a locking spell in the library, and that is something that means that, like, she can ideally lock the castle in place so he can't just keep warping it around once they find it.
Right, because that is one of the reasons why no one can really, like, siege his castle, because he just will move it around instantly. And, you know, if you're planning on, like, doing a huge siege and, you know, every detail is accounted for and then the thing just disappears, you can't really make a good attack, so.
Yeah, yeah. So that's her thing now, is like, okay, she's going to try to move the castle and then lock it into place. Mm-hmm. And they say that what they want to do is move it right above the Belmont Hold, basically, where they're at. But before that can really happen, the hold is attacked. So Dracula and Carmilla and all them figure out where they are. Mm-hmm. They send a bunch of things there. And it's basically like this boss gauntlet of Trevor fights this like huge horned beast in like the spiral staircase area, and every time he like kills one, it's like here comes another, like unique weird demons. It's not just like a huge horde,
right?
Which this is a real video gamey feeling section here, as he's just taking on beast after beast. Mm-hmm. But it's fucking cool. Like,
it's
all
really
the fights
cool.
are great, and Trevor's doing awesome. So they move the castle. Carmilla convinces Dracula to move it to, what's the name of
Brela?
The Brela. And then she kind of makes her move. She takes the resurrected priest from the first season. This place is like a peninsula. And so he turns all the water into holy water, which I guess makes it so, like, she thinks it makes it so the castle won't be able to move. Mm-hmm. And so she has armies in the city. And so this army all starts to kind of like stage this sneak attack on, or surprise attack on the castle, and starts to kind of bum rush it. But kind of just as it's starting, like, some of the guys have gotten into the castle, but not all of them, Sypha is able to warp it. Like, the castle goes fucking nuts. It's moving around all crazy. And then it's gone. And you can tell Carmilla and Hector are like, what the fuck happened? Like,
right.
This was not part of the plan. It just completely goes out the window. And that leads into episode 7, which is far and away my favorite episode of this series. Mm-hmm. It fucking starts with, like, they have to go up the whole, like, spiral staircase thing, but then Sypha's like, oh, I'll just make, like, an ice elevator and takes it up. And I thought it was nice. She threw it, like, into the horizon, just being like, I don't want it to melt and screw up your books. Like, I thought that was kind of fun. But holy shit, this whole episode is just...
It's the climax of the season, for sure.
Of the series. I mean, first of all, they get in there, the three heroes get into the castle, and there's still some fights going on between, like, Carmilla's dudes and Dracula's hordes and everything. And fucking Bloody Tears, which is one of my favorite tracks of Castlevania history, a series that is known for its incredible music, this awesome version of Bloody Tears starts, and it's just chaos, brutal fighting. Like, do you remember that part where that dude makes, or she makes, like, the ice wall?
Oh,
like
that was
a
so
thin
cool,
ice
yeah.
wall.
And so the guy is, like, running towards her, balancing on the really thin ice wall. And then she just, like, swipes it up so it cuts him in half, I guess.
Yeah, and, like, before you see his body, it's just, like, you see the ice with, mm-hmm. like, all the blood streaks on it. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that guy got fucked
yeah.
up.
So, I mean, I was thinking that these, like, at least the people in the war council would form some kind of a resistance against them and put up a fight, but the heroes just kind of go right through them like it's nothing. I mean, and they all work together really well. It's like they're beautifully choreographed fights.
Yes.
And how all the powers kind of complement each other. I thought it was really cool that Alucard had this, like, his sword hovering over his shoulder. So he can do all this crazy fight, dancey shit, and then just have his sword come in whenever he wanted to inflict the final blow.
Yeah, totally. It's really cool. It's almost like, you know, like God of War, you'd leave your axe somewhere and then be punching someone and you can, like pull it back and I hit someone on the way. Like, but, like, way more intricate than that.
Really cool.
So that's kind of what all three of them are doing, is Trevor is doing a bunch of cool shit with his, like, you know, whip flail thing where he's, like, you know, tying up people's legs and conking them together.
And, like, and just making them explode. Up. I guess it was enchanted or something. Cause
yeah.
Maybe that's his new whip is enchanted that way. Because some of these people were exploding.
Yeah, like there's a lot of shots of him like whipping the ball of the whip into something's mouth and then it just like they get filled with fire or something and then explode. It's like fucking things up. And so he's doing all that cool shit. Alucard's doing his weird sword dance levitation stuff that's awesome. And he's kind of warping around doing vampire shit. And then Sypha does like this ice shit. And then there's a part near the end. It's just a straight up Mortal Kombat fatality when she like dashes towards one and puts her hand like right in the guy's face and just... Full on scorpion breathing fire on someone. You're just not a thing anymore. Like those atoms are gone.
Right. It's,
oh man, I cannot say enough about. We're not even through this episode yet, but this first section with Bloody Tears is so fucking good.
So I mean, all those enemies were obviously really like high up, powerful enemies, and the fact that they cut through them so quickly kind of emphasizes how strong Dracula is, because like almost. Immediately, Dracula just wipes the floor with these guys, and it seems like, how the fuck are they going to beat him?
Yeah.
Especially after, like, we were so confident going into it, and then it's like, oh, shit, Dracula's on a completely different level.
Oh, yeah. But he can – you can sense that he's maybe a little bit worried about the situation, because he does take Isaac, and in this kind of, like, show of humanity, he's like, well, you're the best of your kind. I want to save you. And he throws him into one of these distance mirrors, which kind of warps him into the desert, just the middle of the desert. And then kind of a cool shot where Isaac realizes, like, it's like, oh no, I'm supposed to protect you. And you see, like, Dracula's image fading away as the mirror closes.
Now, if Dracula really wanted to preserve Isaac, he should have thrown a lady in there for him so they could reproduce.
Oh, an Adam and Eve situation or something? Yeah. But yeah, with Isaac out of the picture, it's just boss fight time.
Yes.
And, like, the three come up and fight Dracula. And like you said, this is where it's like, oh shit, he is super powerful.
Unbelievably strong.
One of the first things he does is, you know that part where he, like, makes that huge, like, boulder fireball that goes down the thing? So that's totally one of the things he has in Symphony. Or at beginning and maybe the end of Symphony and the end of Bloodlines, where that's what the ball looks like. It's like this flaming rock thing that comes at you and you have to jump and duck and all that stuff. So again, even if you'd never played that game, that just looks like a cool Dracula power.
Right.
But to me, it's like, oh man, that's this fucking fireball. That's great.
So Trevor's like repeatedly punching him in the face, and Dracula doesn't even flinch. It's like so badass.
Like they don't even animate it. Like there's not even like little divots in his face or anything. This is the point where it goes full on Dragon Ball Z. Like Alucard and Dracula are floating in the sky, just punching each other a million times, throwing each other through shit.
Exactly. It isn't long into the fight where you realize it's more just an Alucard Dracula fight, because I mean, obviously they have a history, their father and son, so it's, you know, appropriate that the fight would concentrate on them.
Yeah.
And it's totally brutal. What you said about Dragon Ball Z is so on point.
Yeah.
They're like literally flying through the sky, like running into each other and dashing into each other and avoiding each other. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's like this long fight scene. And it's cool because the castle itself is such a just huge, crazy labyrinth with all these weird rooms and everything. And so they're doing like Mortal Kombat 3 things where you can like knock each other through the stage and show up in another, you know, arena and stuff like that. And they keep doing this. And just by accident, basically, it seems, they wind up in Alucard's bedroom.
His childhood
bedroom. Yeah, so you see all his toys and everything. And like as soon as Dracula realizes this, it just kind of brings everything to a screeching halt. And he's like, oh my God, like I made these toys with Lisa for you. And like he starts kind of talking to Lisa and just being like, oh my God, I'm trying to kill our son. What's wrong with me? Like, you know, maybe I don't deserve to live or whatever. And they super fucking kill Dracula here.
Yeah, while Dracula is kind of brooding about what he's done or in the process of doing, Alucard takes advantage of the opportunity and rips off like a peg from the bed and makes a stake, like a giant stake, and just runs into him and fucks him up.
Several different like pushes into him. Just like, and then like one big just like, oh, he's
finally
he's
goes
dead.
Right through him, yeah.
And so they stake him, and then that's when Trevor and Sypha come in. And is it Trevor? Or no, I think Alucard beheads him. Someone cuts his fucking head off.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, Alucard is kind of shocked at what he had just done to his father, and his father is withering away and, like, blowing away to the point where it just looks like a skeleton.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's about to attack Alucard, and I think that's what Trevor thought.
That's right.
So he comes in and just decapitates him.
Yeah, he's kind of, like, still lurching forward a little bit, and then head comes off. And then, so it's just this headless, like, thing of ashes that looks like if you pushed it over, it would just disintegrate.
Right.
But then Sifo still comes in with fire magic and just, like, burns the fuck out of the rest of his body. So, like, I think they want to be like, no, we are actually killing Dracula in season two of this Castlevania show, which is a ballsy move. I think right before that episode, I told you, I was like, well, there's no way they killed Dracula in season two. You know, he's the main guy. But, I mean, that must be part of why they were building up, like, Carmilla and everything so much here. Is like, now we do have an antagonist moving forward. But I can't say enough about this episode. I mean, it's bookended by, you know, you've got the Bloody Tears fight at the beginning. You got the Dracula thing at the end with no real fluff or anything in between. It is the perfect episode of this show.
Right. Is it in this episode or the next where Alucard decides to stay with the castle?
That's the next one. That's kind of the epilogue episode there. Which, yeah, that kind of just kind of ties up some stuff. They say, like, well, the castle's here and the hold is below, so Alucard, why don't you just be here and you can have, you know, just like both sides, you've got a Dracula side or vampire side and human side, you get the human hold and you get the Dracula castle and all that. Which I don't know how he's going to afford all the upkeep, because they kind of fucked that up. I would assume there was a bunch of, like, treasure stuff in there.
I mean, the way I see it, Alucard was able to build that crypt for himself under a Grazit or whatever the name of that first city was. I think that he can probably use his powers to put a lot of the stuff together.
Yeah, I guess if you were...
And I would also assume that he doesn't have any money troubles.
Yeah, I guess if you were like an incredibly powerful half-vampire, you'd find ways to make ends meet.
I think he'll be okay.
He'll do fine, yeah.
And also, I feel like it wouldn't be inappropriate for him to live in like the ruins of a castle, right? I feel
like it's just brooding. Well, and there's some cool stuff too, where it's like, it's just this big empty castle now, and he's walking around and he's kind of talking out loud like, oh, man, is this what it was like for you, Dad? Like, just being alone in this big castle? And, like, he's kind of just sad? Well, he killed his father.
He, like, openly weeps on that chair for a while.
Yeah, thinking about his mom and everything. And it's a cool scene. Yeah. Like, normally it's like a show, you kill the big bad guy, and then it's like, oh, credits, fly the helicopter off, you know, commando. But we do see a little bit of Alucard just being like, fuck, I killed my dad.
Right.
And, like, even, like, sees a vision of him coming down the stairs at one point. I thought this was all super effective.
Super effective, yeah.
Yeah. And then we get kind of a catch up on Isaac in the desert, where a bunch of assholes show up in this oasis and they want all the water to themselves, and he fucks them up real good.
I mean, they were so asking for it, though.
Oh, yeah. They are painting these guys as, like, the biggest assholes ever.
They're That's
like,
what I kind of anticipated the show is going to do, like, make it so we feel like, oh, fuck, humanity should have been exterminated, you know? Everyone's a fucking asshole. They should be off the face of the earth. But
I mean, between, like, the church people and, like, these people in the desert, like, yeah, a lot of the humans are fucking terrible in the show.
Right.
I feel like kind of Trevor and Sifo and the speakers are kind of the ones that are like, okay, you all seem like you're – well, the villagers, too, when they kind of realize they
I mean, there are countless people that aren't really touched on at all that I'm sure are particularly evil. But
that's true. But I think there has been more time given to making humans seem irredeemably evil.
Yes.
Whereas, like, the Dracula army is like, well, okay, we are seeing a little bit more of, like, you know, sympathetic side of them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and all the stuff that the humans have done to be evil is stuff that humans have actually done. So maybe as a whole, humanity is kind of irredeemable.
Oh, like burning at the stake and all
burning
that stuff.
Burning at the stake. I'm sure a lot of people have, you know, selfishly kept other people from, you know, having water or whatever.
Yeah, and like religious wars and stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
Hello, holy wars.
So Isaac, after killing the shit out of all these dudes, is kind of like, oh, I could turn you guys into my army. It'd be kind of nice to have an army.
Oh, yeah, because he's a forge master, so he could just bring them back from the dead.
Yeah, and so he makes the first total asshole guy, and we kind of see him turn into a beast. And then I really like the shot where it's just kind of like the hills, and it's kind of at night, and you just see these beams of red light go up every time he's, like, you know, resurrecting one of them.
Right.
Thought that was pretty cool. That's some, like, Diablo shit. Like,
yeah, so I wonder if he will target the people that killed Dracula first, or if he's going to target Carmilla for kind of being the catalyst of everything.
It's a good question, and that's definitely what this kind of epilogue is setting up, is Isaac is building an army, and then we see Carmilla And she imprisons Hector. She kind of puts him in this, like...
And beats the shit out of him.
Yeah, like, mercilessly beats the shit out of him.
And laughs.
Yeah, yeah. She's just being just irredeemably evil here. And says, like, okay, well, I'm keeping you here, and you're going to build my horde. Mm-hmm. You know, I need an army. You know, she's basically saying, I'm taking over as the big bad guy of the series, and mm-hmm. you're going to build my army. and that's kind of the setup for... I don't know if there's going to be a season 3, necessarily.
I would hope so, too.
I hope it's doing well. Because, like, you know, I'll go to Netflix or whatever, and I'll go down to, like, Netflix originals and scroll through sometimes when I'm trying to find the show. And it's, like, it's never there because Netflix puts out 8,000 things every week.
Well, I don't know if this is influenced by what we choose to watch, but sometimes if you're on the menu and you just kind of let it idle for a while, there'll be, like, key art that takes over the screen from different shows. And I've seen Castlevania appear.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, so maybe they're doing a little bit of spotlighting it.
Yeah, it's a really fun show. I do hope that it gets another season. That would be great.
Yes, and I hope anyone who listens to Painting the Stream has been inspired to go watch it, because mm-hmm. it is definitely one of my favorite things we have watched for this podcast, and probably my favorite video game media ever, as far as, like, going outside of the gaming medium.
Yes.
Fucking great stuff.
Fucking great.
I also want to say, I've always been a big sucker for how Castlevania has depicted Dracula's castle. Mm-hmm. Just this weird thing with all these, like, weird bridges and, like, upside down, like, pillars and spires and stuff. It's just this, like, crazy, like, it doesn't look possible, you know? Right. And the fact that it's this weird, like, almost living thing with gears that warps around. And I've always thought that was the coolest looking
shit.
It's
very cool. It looks like, I love giant castles that look more like cities than, like, actual buildings. That definitely strikes me as, like, a giant city that's kind of floating in the air and able to teleport around. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I think that's also why I've always preferred the Metroidvania Castlevania games, because I like the feeling of, like, exploring this giant crazy mm-hmm. castle and unlocking things that let me get to new areas and everything.
Yeah, it turns out giant castles are the great setting for a lot of different video games.
Turns out, yeah, that's my favorite Hitman 2 map. That's
Resident Evil.
Yes, yes. And, yeah, lots of good big castles.
That's a good one.
Bowser's Castle. So that is it for Castlevania season 2.
Yes.
I'm very glad we went back to back on Castlevania, because that was just a thrilling show.
And thank you for whoever recommended it. If no one recommended it, then I guess.
I think a lot of people recommended it.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure we got some recommendations from listeners, but also, like, Tim Turry has been head over heels for
it. Tim Turry, I mean, that guy is just one of the greatest guys. Am I right?
He is one of the greatest. He was literally my best man at our wedding.
He is the best man.
Yes. Yes, he is. So, yeah, thanks to anyone who told me I should check out Castlevania, because it is a tremendous show.
Great show.
Next week, we're going to be going very far away from Castlevania.
Approaching things a little differently.
Yes.
Next week.
Yes. We are going to watch a show on Netflix called Explained, mm-hmm. which we looked at the episodes, and it seems to be just a thing where it's like, hey, here's a bunch of potentially confusing things that we're going to try to explain very concisely.
Right.
And there are episodes about all sorts of stuff, like DNA. Like 15, and
20 minutes long?
Huh? Yeah, they're all like 15 to 20 minutes long, basically. They're all really short. And we picked two of them. Things that we know, I know a little bit about one of these, and I knew nothing about the other. Were you 0 and 0 pretty much with these two?
I mean, just definitely 0 with one. And I mean, a very, very minuscule understanding of the other.
Yes. So the two that we are going to watch are The Stock Market mm-hmm. and Cricket.
Yes.
So
there's an episode on the stock market and an episode on cricket.
Yes. The total should be like, it should take you like a half hour to watch both of them, basically.
Right.
And so we had kind of a fun thing we want to try with this, is that we normally, like, I definitely take a lot of notes coming into the podcast, but we had a rule with this where we did not take any notes,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to give it like a day at least before we record the episode. So we're just going to have to remember the shit that we learn about the stock market.
So
and
what
cricket.
You will be listening to next week really won't be indicative of what the show has to offer.
We'll talk about how the
we'll
show
try
works.
Our best, but
it's mostly going to be us being confused about what things we've learned.
Yeah. So if you want a really incorrect explanation of what cricket and the stock market is, then tune in next week.
We got the podcast for you. Yeah. Talk about fucking Dracula one episode and the stock market the next. Mm. So that'll be next week.
Yes.
That'll be nice. Short viewing homework if you would like to join in. If suggestions this week. I got one.
Dan, you go first. I feel like I always go first with the suggestions.
Okay. I will go. I mentioned this. Me and Vinny talked about it on the Beastcast.
Vinny Caravella.
Yes.
Oh, what a dude.
Great dude. There's a book. It's a coffee table book called The Game Console. And if you're anything like me and you have a real fondness for old game consoles that you grew up with, or even ones before that, this is just a really cool book. It's a coffee table book that's a lot of like, they call it something when they like break apart an electronic and you see all the like interior components like sliced up basically. Mm-hmm. So this is just really cool, just high res photos of all these consoles and like their inner workings and everything. And it really just struck a certain nostalgia note for me, just saying like, oh, look at all the guts of a Dreamcast or a 64 or the PS2 and the NES. It really, really cool. Just fun to flip through.
Is there any console in particular that stood out to you?
No, just basically the ones that I owned, you know, like the NES, the Super Nintendo, the 64, all that stuff. Basically all of them but the Saturn. That's the one main console during my life I never owned.
Oh.
I know you come from a Sega family, yes, so I apologize.
Died in the little Sega family.
Yes. So that book is called The Game Console. It is on Amazon. I don't have the...
Now, why is it called The Game Console?
It's an abstract thing. I'm not really sure. I think it's some kind of artsy thing. So do you have any suggestions?
I do. So, Dan, when you are sitting down at your coffee table to read your coffee table book.
Yes.
I recommend, while drinking your coffee, that you have, and you can attest to my passion for Milano cookies. Now, everyone sees them in the grocery store. They've been a staple for years. But in my quest to find the cookie that best stands up to coffee, not only in form, but also in flavor. I mean, it needs to go well with the coffee.
Right.
But it needs to withstand the soaking in a
structural
coffee.
Integrity.
It needs to have structural integrity. Exactly. It can't just fall into dust or whatever.
Like Dracula.
And no one wants to have those like final sips of your coffee to be diluted by weird glumps of old cookie.
Right.
Am I right?
Yeah, you're right.
And I found in my extensive testing on this, I found that Milano cookies are the best. So if you want something that goes well with your coffee, a little bit of coffee and after a long day of work, or you're sitting around the table with your family and you want a little dessert, a little coffee and, as we call it in the Monda family, I recommend Milano cookies. What can I say? It's a simple pleasure. They're usually on sale. Get them for $1.49 at ShopRite.
Do you work for the Milano Cookie Corporation?
No, but I read – this was a while ago, and this has absolutely nothing to do with why I brought it up now. But speaking of that, I read someone like talked about it in a blog, like back when people would blog – just randomly how they realized after a while that they were like their favorite cookies. And then Pepperidge Farm sent them like $400.
Oh, really? Is that why you did this?
No, absolutely not. I'm so glad when I'm like through with a thing of it because it's like, oh, I don't have to save calories and
be
the day
tempted
for that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So the game console and Milano cookies.
There you go.
All right. So before we wrap up, we definitely want to thank everyone that participates
in
the listener support program. If you listen to this podcast, you like it, you want to help us keep it running and everything, you can go to paintingthestream.com. You can click support this podcast. You can do $1, $5, or $10 a month, or you can just do a one-time thing and then cancel it. It's very easy, it's secure, easy to do. Do you have a haiku, honey?
I do. So there's a person named Taylor that donated to us, and I want to say thank you, Taylor. And as a show of thanks, I wrote him a small haiku. Can I share it with you, Dan?
You can, yes.
I don't know why I said small haiku. I feel like
they're all the same, basically,
all have to be the same length.
Yes.
Okay. This is for you, Taylor. I wish to sit down alongside Taylor and give him an enthusiastic cheer. That's it.
I wish to sit down alongside Taylor? Wait, I wish to sit down alongside Taylor.
And give him?
That's 8.
Taylor.
It's 575.
Yeah. I wish... Oh.
Uh-oh, honey.
Anyway, so...
thanks Taylor. Thanks so much. And thanks to everyone who participates in listener support. Like we say every time, it's mom and pop operation. We don't have, you know, this is not a giant hundreds of thousands reach or even tens of thousands.
We're not
reach.
A part of the Cool Kids Podcast Network.
No, not so much. And just to give you a sense, we're running out of people to write haikus about. So if you
Dan,
like a haiku,
don't tell them.
Hey, I'm fine with exposing the business.
All right, what he's saying is that if you donate us any amount of money, there's a good chance that you're going to have a haiku written about it.
Yeah, we're getting near the end of the list. We're going to have to start doubling up on Taylor and the others and Dan. Yes,
well, they deserve
Stephen.
It.
They do. Yes, thank you so much for continuing to support the podcast. And also, if you want to give us feedback, you can follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. You can email us.
Pan that stream.
You can email us at panningthestream@gmail.com. And that's about it. You can give us a review on iTunes if you want. Give us 5 stars if you're liking the show. Let us know what you think. But that will be it for this week. Again, Castlevania is great. And we look forward to talking about the stock market and cricket from Netflix's Explained next week. That's it for this week. Bonk, thank you so much for joining me as always.
Thank you, Daniel.
And thank you all at home for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.